Hey, this is Movies, a podcast by The Active Cinema. And with me today, he picked tonight's selection. It is Hans. Yeah. Now, this has been a movie you've been looking forward to for quite some time, hasn't it?
No. No, I just read about it and I saw that it was like a found footage movie from this year. So I thought, why not? What else is there from 2024?
There's plenty. It was really... We could do another show on Dune Part 2, where you're talking up the science fiction one from 2000, science fiction channel, excuse me, from 2000, more than the Denis Villeneuve sequel. And I did read today, he's writing Dune Messiah right now.
I've already forgotten about that, Dune. That's erased from my memory already.
Dune,
I remember like
erasure.
The last scene that I showed on this show was just green and blue sand mountains.
It was a man accidentally disappearing due to poor chroma keying. I remember right. Iconic ending to that series. Well,
yeah,
this has an iconic ending. This film, what is this film? You're a fan of this director, aren't you? I think we were figuring out what to do with our show, which got canceled impromptu, and I've since learned the guest had a medical emergency, so they couldn't do the show, and this was the fallback, and my, what a fallback it was. It is the 2024 feature film, Frogman.
People keep saying that my Frogman footage is fake, and I'm gonna get proof that the Frogman exists.
Morning, sunshine!
We're in! Let's do this, man.
Frogman, that's what put Loveland on the map.
So are you a Frogman fan?
That what brings your folks to town?
We're actually making a documentary.
Is he an ancient god? Or is he an ancient alien, maybe? Or is he a big frog trying to get his rocks off? So Dallas, do you have anything to say about what you're really trying to accomplish here?
I want the world to know the truth.
Okay.
About Frogman.
All right, down in the woods. What the fuck was that?
I saw Frogman as a kid, and what I saw was a real thing.
I think it's time for you folks to head on home.
But I know what I saw that day. And I'm gonna get irrefutable proof. Frogman exists.
Are you getting all this?
Whoa.
That's the slime from the tree. He was here.
From one of the directors of Scare Package and Scare Package 2.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've seen either of those. I follow someone that does masks and creepy special effects shit, and I think they did the monsters for this. So that's kind of how I got, you know, how this movie even came to my radar. And I just thought, you know, it's an hour and 20. Why not? And then as soon as I put it on, I was like, oh no, this is why not.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you mentioned you follow someone who does masks and special effects. Today, I saw someone do a latex face mask and contacts of a chimpanzee. And it was the closest thing I've ever felt to like being a furry. Not that I wanted to fuck the chimpanzee, but I was like, wouldn't that be cool if that was me? If I was a chimpanzee? I had a Joe Rogan moment. That happens every so often where I'll watch a monkey video and I'll be like, yeah, life would be so much simpler if I was just like carrying around a stick in some sort of zoo. So
are we finally getting YMS on this show?
No, but here's what it made me think. It made me think, damn, how much to buy that mask and then figure out a project after where I can just play a chimpanzee. Wouldn't that be a great follow-up role to the role of Richard Rathke in Mass State Lottery is a chimpanzee? I could do we could do a biopic on that lady who had her face removed and you could play the lady.
Yeah. We can just do Impractical Jokers in Times Square, but you're a monkey that just like humps people.
Someone would shoot me. That would
Yeah,
be the end of me.
immediately.
That would be death. That would be over.
We need a bulletproof monkey suit,
Yes.
otherwise, and stab-proof and
You know, I'm
New
sure the
York
old
proof.
Planet of the Apes monkey suits were pretty durable back in the 60s, so maybe we get one of those and it's just an upgraded face. But I'd taken a look at this. It was recommended to me on Instagram. I was like, how could you ever be Disney? I mean, obviously, we're talking in a way where Disney isn't primarily concerned with saving. Actually, no, this would probably save money too, just not save time. How could you ever do a CGI Planet of the Apes movie ever again when there are people in their spare time making these chimpanzee faces so realistic looking? Like remarkably similar to to real chimps, and then go and do seven times the budget on really shoddy CGI. It's unbelievable that they would go that
What is it?
route.
It is it Immortal ma
No,
masks?
no, no. I mean,
No.
they did the principal. I mean, I guess you're really more, you play the primary antagonist of Mass State Lottery, but there's a secondary antagonist in that film that is entirely made up of practical effects, and they did the design for that. That was their mold. Is that company you just referenced there? But no, it's not them. It's some freelancer, some guy who's by himself, not a company. And it was extremely impressive. But that does tie back into Frogman. So Frogman has some visual effects that are practical effects in it. And it seems like what I just said, which is, hey, can we come up with a project to suit this design that we have here? What can we do with this? And then the concept comes second.
And everything comes second.
Before we get back to the show, I want to encourage you to visit patreon.com/lowres and sign up for our $5 tier right now. We have video installments of every episode of Movies and B-Bang you listen to on Spotify and Apple Podcasts weeks before they go out. And bonus shows you won't find anywhere else. We also have our ultra exclusive $100 tier, which allows you to select one movie we'll watch for our program Movies, a podcast about the act of cinema. We typically have an eclectic mix of films that we usually cover, but you can make it as obscure or as mainstream as it gets. And yes, I will take pleasure in the fact that Hans will have to endure a whole viewing of your movie without napping. So head on over to patreon.com/lowres and sign up today.
I feel like there's so many elements that we're missing from this movie for it to work, for this type
Like
of movie
what?
to work that this movie doesn't have. Like, so we have out of town people that are coming into a town that's not their own, right? So usually to have the audience immerse themselves into the character and what they're doing and them being into a, either a hostile environment or a strange environment is by giving personality to the little town or place where they're at that differentiates them between our main characters and the town. Here, it's a town with people that talk just like our characters, that act just like our characters. So the whole fish out of water aspect is gone because no one acts in any kind of odd or any kind of Texas Chainsaw Massacre gas station where it would be because I feel like when they do when these movies do that the setting becomes an extra character because then it becomes well who knows what the fuck is going to happen because this is a town that's not what they're used to
I definitely see
but
what you're saying. I think that would have absolutely lended itself to the opportunity to do that, and it probably would have added something. This is maybe the more realistic approach of because of social media, small town characteristics disappear and are far more subtle now than they used to be. So I wasn't bothered by that, and I've seen worse versions of, oh, we're essentially doing the Texas Chainsaw trope, and this movie's full of 100 other tropes that you've seen in 50 horror movies in the past 20 years. So I wasn't particularly bothered by that. It didn't stand out to me since they do dress up that, oh, Frogman, of course Frogman's real, but you're right. There's no real difference between the local townspeople and how they approach the topic of Frogman and also the main character.
Because It's I feel like at all times our main character is more afraid of Frogman than everyone, and you'd think that in this town, I take it as like a straight line to Mothman, right? So Mothman, there's this town in Maine,
No, no, no,
maybe?
no, no. It was out in like
Where is it?
Nebraska or something. It felt very Midwest, if I remember right.
Okay, something like that. So where Mothman is like the town's mascot, let's say. It's very similar to this because it started as like a creepy thing, but then it became a tourist destination, and then they have like festivals and get-togethers so that foreigners and people from other places come to their Mothman celebration. So it's very similar to this. But if you're gonna make a horror movie where we're supposed to be afraid of a Frogman character, then at least show me someone in the town that's kind of creeped out. We saw one person that acted kind of afraid, which was the old man that they interviewed in that very dark house. But at the same time, he was he I wasn't sure if he was afraid of telling them or if he just wanted them to get the fuck out of his house because the energy was kind of the same. You know, it was kind of like, hey, don't get hurt, but at the same time, fuck off. You know, I don't want to see you here anymore in my home. So that I it's missing so many things for like a found footage movie that I feel like that element of making the setting something, anything, give me some lore of something. Because when you have the Blair Witch, sure, everything is revealed as they advance, so nothing is set up. It's just you're just in the forest, right? So when you have a reveal like that, that's little by little being fed to you, then fine. But at least they made it in a creepy, different way where we're discovering things as the characters are discovering things. And this one, it's implied that the characters know more than we know, but then they don't really tell you much. It's kind of just like, oh, I'm embarrassed because people don't think that my video was real, so I have to prove them wrong. And
Right.
that's his goal, right? But then there's really not much around that other than just a very stubborn, I guess, filmmaker that doesn't do anything. And all he wants to do is just prove people wrong. But then there's this creepy monster that everyone's afraid of, but no one is afraid of at the same time. You know what I mean? So it's like a lot of like, you could have done this thing to make it creepy or to make it horror, but then it became just bland because they don't go there. You know what I mean? So then it's just,
Yeah, I think
who
there you
cares?
pointed out a really significant gap in this film, which is that there isn't a presumed lore to the Frogman that's introduced. There is with Blair Witch, there is with Mothman, there is with all these cryptid movies or Sasquatch or whatever it might be. You lay the groundwork for what the idea of this Frogman or whatever this creature is, and then you subvert it at a certain point, and that's what you're supposed to be doing. That is not something that happens with this film here. But I'll tell you what, the level of competency in terms of screenwriting and acting and everything else was about exactly on par with Late Night with the Devil. I was just thinking, Late Night with the Devil is this done at 25 times the budget range. That there's no level of quality that is met with Late Night with the Devil in terms of the writing and all. Everything is established in the story than this. And this feels like it was, without being too disparaging to the filmmakers here, because I kind of want to, I don't want to take it easy on them, but I do feel like to be on the level of this film production crew and make this movie is probably a lot more difficult, and you have more skin in the game than the people who did Late Night with the Devil. But it feels like a weekend project, this movie. It's not really clear, coherent. It doesn't seem like they tried to reshoot anything, because if there were reshoots, then certainly when the lead character, and I'd like to find the character's name if we can pull this up on Letterboxd or something. I'm sure there's not a Wikipedia page for this movie, no offense. When the lead characters that we're following on this trip to go find Frogman get together at that wedding party, the audio is really terrible. It's really unprofessional. It feels like it got filtered through about three different softwares that were not professional grade. There's no subtitles, which you could have added if it, you know, it's a found footage thing. Okay, Dallas. How could you forget a name like Dallas? Dallas, Scotty, and Amy. Okay, Frogman Worshipper. That's the fourth lead character. You were reading an article that said what AI can do today. What are you, my grandma?
No, it's a website. Shut up. It's a website right here. It's easy. Okay. You just ask AI for something. Stop looking at my tabs, you fuck.
You got to clear those before you share your screen. Oh, that's Doctor Who now? He looks cool. You going to Phoenix?
What, what the fuck?
Going to Phoenix, huh? For a wild weekend? Ooh, boy. All right. Damn. 334 pesos.
Are you into Doctor Who?
Hell no. I've never enjoyed a single second of Doctor Who. Ever.
Yeah, I've tried. I tried when I was in England because that's their thing, right? And then they would be like, oh, no, but just do the David Tennant one. That one's good. Oh, no, but the one after David Tennant, that one's better. Oh, the one before. I watched one episode of like two of them. And I was like, this is so fucking dorky and just
Too much. You have to be into wacky, corny shit. You have to be an Invader Zim fan and talk like Invader Zim in order to enjoy Doctor Who.
In 2024, yeah.
In any era, really. Not when Invader Zim was on the air for 2 years in like fifth grade. But now, So, okay, you have these three lead characters, and I'll be honest, I like the lead guy. I think the lead actor is good enough with what he's given for a script, and a lot of the script feels like a first draft to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel particularly well thought out, or it's literally the most basic level of thinking when you're just doing, I have to get 80 pages clocked in. I'll take a look at it again later. Autopilot writing is what I would call it. And
kind of like just a byline and then just less interact like them. It's not even like all the lines are not even written. It's just, well, I'm this character, so I'm just reacting to what you say.
Yeah. And look, I think there's something to be said about simplicity in dialogue, not dressing it up too much so it's not some, you know, inelegant. You know, there's a problem that I run into because we work in a group of filmmakers, and people will send off drafts of their script kind of early before it's polished. They get excited. They're like, hey, I want to do this. I want to shoot this next year. It's a first draft. It's a second draft. Let me know what you think. And instead of just doing the simple, I have to go to the store, they will overthink the line of dialogue and give you three sentences for that simple premise that doesn't sound natural and doesn't roll off the character's tongue. This movie doesn't do this. This movie sticks to, I have to go to the store type of dialogue throughout.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother to rethink the dialogue at any point. The actors, aside from the main supporting guy who plays Scotty, who feels like just some guy they picked up in LA. He doesn't, you know, I don't think his acting is bad, but there's no chemistry really between any of the three. But I think especially between the two best friends.
It's so awkward. Like the interaction between the three of them, because two of them are kind of in a friendship. What are those called? Friendlationships? Where they're friends, but they like each other.
What they call it is a situationship these days.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then there's the cameraman who's just there and who's just kind of awkward and nothing. You know, very a fifth character in a sitcom from the 90s where it's like, oh, he's there, but doesn't really add much.
A character from the 90s like Carl Winslow who got fucked up the ass by P. Diddy, allegedly. You were there. You said you were there. You walked in on it, and they didn't stop. They got harder.
It was outside of Nakatomi Plaza, right outside. He was being fucked as he was dressed as a cop.
They never brought him back for those sequels, did they? Reginald.
Did they?
Johnson.
I don't know. I've been so long since I've seen the sequels. I don't know.
He wasn't in the N-word one, right?
Which one's that?
They recast him with Sam Jackson.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Kevin Hart ones. What is Die Hard?
Die Hard. No, but I do appreciate them re-rolling that back out after Quibi sank. But as a movie, I did watch like the first 20 minutes of that, and it was as bad and low grade as you would expect.
Die Hard. I thought it was a series.
It was, and then they repackaged it as a movie because Quibi went under. And they were like, we did a whole thing with Kevin Hart. We paid fucking Kevin Hart millions of dollars. John Travolta is in this. What, we can't do anything with this now? So whatever Saudi Arabian company produced that, put it back out into theaters as a movie.
Well, Netflix probably bought it because they have everything Kevin Hart.
There might be a conflict there because it used to be owned by Quibi. I don't know if it's on Netflix. I saw it on the Costa Rican theater. That's where I found out it was a movie now. It was stunning.
Wow, you downloaded it and everything? It wasn't just on streaming? You used your... You got an email from your internet providers to stop downloading movies, and it was for Die Hard.
Yeah, no, I really did not want to contribute to any streaming numbers to cause a Die Hard 2. That's really what the crux of that was. So we're covering Frogman the week that Sasquatch Sunset comes out. It is a great subversive tactic for this podcast. Do you have any interest in that Jesse Eisenberg, Zellner Brothers movie?
I don't even know what that is.
That's it's a Sasquatch movie with Riley Keough, Jesse Eisenberg. They're all done up in their outfits, and apparently it's nothing but Sasquatches out in the forest. One of my trusted critics, James Hancock, says it's a good movie, but I watched the trailer and I was like, I'm never watching this fucking thing.
It sounds very, very, you know, when Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords was in the States making quirky indie comedies with people like John Heffer.
John,
what was his
Heffer.
Name? Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah. They used to call me John Heater in high school.
John Heater.
Yeah.
Did you look like...
I really didn't. I don't know why I got that comparison or why I got called that, but I got that in like 10th grade often.
The human version or the Napoleon?
I don't know. I don't know. It's too long now. It's too long ago. It's a lost memory. You just saying
but it
that
feels,
brought it back for the first time in years.
It feels like that, like a Gentleman Broncos type of thing. Remember those movies are like, oh, look how quirky this movie is about a writer and he likes unicorns, and it's like, oh, all right, that's quirky, I guess. Cool.
I never liked any of those. They never made a connection for me.
Nacho Libre is the one for me. That's the only one, really. Right. It's more because I'm Mexican, so he like touches my little...
That's just an ethnic mix. Pride thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, but it's also I was going to say it's also the 20th anniversary of Shrek 2. They put that back
That's
out
cool.
in theaters.
Did they?
Yeah. It's
Did you
playing.
Go see it?
I'm looking at Showtimes right now. I would never go see Shrek. I've never seen Shrek 2. I don't think. I enjoyed that first Shrek so much when I was a boy, and I knew immediately the sequels are going to be bad. I'm not going to watch the sequels, and I never did.
I don't think they're bad. From what I can remember, it's also been like whenever they came out, it's been that long. But I remember thinking they were funny before, I guess. It's three movies, and then there's like a Christmas special, and then they made a series or
Trash.
Something, right? They just milked.
They
just
watered.
Like they do with,
that first Shrek movie, people forget, it made an impact in the same way that something like Superbad did. And it was this really original, edgy kids film at the time. And it was funny. And I remember I was 12 years old or something when it came out. And I was past that type of movie. And I watched Shrek. And I thought Shrek was really enjoyable and funny. But now it's like you can't even look at Shrek as Shrek the movie anymore because it's been memed so much. And it's part of this online cultural identity in the same way that SpongeBob is. And you can't detach that if you've been exposed to it. So I would never sit down and give 90 minutes of time to the Shrek sequels or Puss in Boots or the Christmas special for ABC, because it's all just going to be generic shit. Of course it is. You know what else they put out in theaters this week is Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man movie. And it seems to be doing banger numbers. It got almost $1 million from this re-release, which is pretty nuts. It's a shame Tobey Maguire is a hollow husk of a man these days, because it would be prime time to do number four.
Did you go see it in the theater?
I was gonna, but I didn't. No. I was looking at Showtime.
Originally,
I did.
In the theater?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I caught it back in 2002. What a great time. It's the 22nd. Why are they putting it in theaters? It's 22 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the 20th year for Spider-Man 2, which...
I guess maybe because they wanted to remind people what a decent superhero movie is, because it's been years since one. So maybe, hey, remember when they were fun?
Yeah, maybe they didn't get their money back on Madam Web. Because that's Sony.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to do it now, because this one was a success, so now they're going to re-release the other two. And especially since the third one has gotten like an online revival of like a revisiting, and it's not actually as bad as we all thought it was when it came out.
Do you fall in that camp? I know we talked about the first Spider-Man movie with Liam from Mass Say Lottery, actor Liam Bannon. Liam J. Bannon, I think, is his Instagram handle. And we talked about how great it was and how the later films that weren't done by Sam Raimi just kind of suck by comparison. But Spider-Man 3 was the tipping point. You got to think, if you're Sony now, I mean, I don't think it's the same management, so who gives a shit? But if you were Sony immediately following, you're probably thinking, damn, we made a big swing and a miss passing this over to Mark Webb and Andrew Garfield, not doing Spider-Man 4.
Yeah, who remembers those movies, right?
Nobody.
Those two. I saw the trilogy, I want to say a year, maybe 2 years ago, and the third one is not as bad as I remember. Yeah. I think because I was expecting it, it didn't just catch me off guard. Because when I first saw it, it was in the theater, and it caught me off guard because I was, you know, it was before the time where the internet would spoil everything for you, so I didn't know what to expect. And then, you know, the Eric Foreman Venom stuff, and like it's corny. It's not as good as the second or the first one, but if you compare it to the 30 Marvel movies that came after, I think it might make top 10. The third one, maybe 15, maybe 10 is too much, especially if you put the other two Spider-Mans on top of it. But it's just goofy, and it's what those Marvel movies are not anymore. It's goofy, doesn't really take itself seriously, and when it does, it's kind of like, it feels like it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it's just very Sam Raimi, but not in his best version, I guess. But I still found it more enjoyable than even the whatever the latest one it's called with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. Like I thought that was boring as fuck. So I enjoy that one more than that. So I would put the Sam Raimi trilogy on top of any of the other Spider-Mans that came out.
I think I probably would too, in principle, although I did enjoy that last Spider-Man movie, and I probably enjoyed it more than Spider-Man 3. But when I remember reading about Spider-Man 3 in the lead up to its release, and people had gotten to see advanced screenings of it and were unhappy about how Venom was presented in the film and how little he was shown in the movie. And when he was shown, they took priority in showing Topher Grace's face instead of Venom's face. And I had that anticipation going in, so I wasn't too disappointed in the fact, oh, we didn't get the fan favorite villain that everybody has always wanted to see, even though it had only been 10 years, I think, since Venom had been created. It was a late 80s Todd McFarlane creation. So
was it 90s?
No, it was late 80s. It was late 80s, okay. I believe. Carnage, I think, was 90s.
Hmm. Right.
And I wanted Carnage. I was thinking, oh, maybe we'll get Carnage for number four now. No. Sam Raimi didn't even want Venom in that movie. And you can clearly see that's the case.
Yeah.
He wanted to stick to the 1960s characters Stan Lee created, which I think that fits a better vibe. It's more tailored to what those movies are. But I remember I went back to Spider-Man 1 and 2. I didn't watch the third one. I haven't seen the editor's cut of the movie. I know they released two different versions of Spider-Man 3. One came about 5 or 6 years after the fact. It was a direct-to-DVD release, and then they put it on FX for a period of time. They also did Spider-Man 2.5 and X-Men 1.5 before then, because back in the day, you would try and milk those DVD sales for as long as you possibly could, and that's how you made your money back on films. So I don't know. I'd need to go back and revisit. I think the novel quality and approach to Sam Raimi's films is not something you see emulated with any of the other Marvel movies or many superhero movies. I think it has the right amount of camp, fun, energy, and world building in those films. And you definitely don't see that with the Mark Webb Amazing Spider. It doesn't matter how talented the cast of actors are. You can get Martin Sheen and Sally Field and Rhys Ifan. Doesn't matter. Andrew Garfield might be correctly snarky and not sound like he's reading lines off a cue card like Tobey Maguire sometimes was when he was Spider-Man and he was trying to be quippy. Doesn't matter. There's just something to those first movies that the other ones don't have. And Tom Holland's films certainly do not have, where they're not even willing to give the baseline template of here's how he becomes Spider-Man. The history of those movies is now Tobey Maguire existed in another dimension and his bad guy came through and killed your Aunt May. Oh, that's not a real fucking Spider-Man series of movies. Yeah. This feels like, oh, this is the offshoot of the offshoot of Spider-Man, which it is. Anyway, all that to say, who do you think would win in a fight between Frogman and Spider-Man?
I thought you were going to say it's just Sam Raimi, Mark Webb, and
who would eat more flies, Spider-Man or Frogman?
I think the biggest difference between those three directors is that one of them has his own style and the other two could be whatever directors or hire you can find in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. What would you say is a Mark Webb style movie?
You can't really say, because 500 Days of Summer does have a distinct cool style, especially for 2011 or whenever that movie came out, 2010. It was like a very bouncy, jumpy of that time, and you don't get that with Amazing Spider-Man. That felt like we gotta do our version of the Dark Knight with Spider-Man, and boy, did they blow that! Did they eat that one hard? And then the second one, I think I enjoy way more than the first Amazing Spider-Man or the first two Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. Even though I love Michael Keaton, Bokeem Woodbine is a shocker in Spider-Man Homecoming. Doesn't matter. So Marvel Studios is just
the second Mark Webb one is so all over the place that it's kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, you can get through it easier because of that,
because it's like picking up from so many different things that at the end you're just kind of like, did you close all of these loose ends that you have, because there's so much?
It's not
like
at all
half hours
It doesn't even really align with the first movie, because suddenly you have the Harry Osborn character who's his best friend, and oh, we're getting reunited, and Dane DeHaan's such a little creep. He visually fits that Harry Osborn, I think, very well, but his personality or something is just like too brooding. Harry was supposed to be James Franco. He's supposed to be like a smug little sneaky asshole guy. Yeah. So
like a charming, handsome, rich guy. He seems more like the classmate that would piss himself in the room, you know, or is just, well, his little creepy Carlos in the corner, always staring, you know what I mean?
Creepy Carlos. I'm sure Dane DeHaan's never been called Creepy Carlos before. But yeah, he's got that vibe. And who did they get for Norman Osborn? Chris Cooper? And that whole story is kind of a premature ejaculation for what that was supposed to be. He gets sick dies, and they remove his head, and they just go, okay, fuck the Norman Osborn Green Goblin arc. Let's get to Harry. It's like someone was unsatisfied that they made Harry the new Goblin in Spider-Man 3 instead of the Green Goblin. They were like, nah, we got to pick up where we left off. Turn this kid into the Green Goblin. And then he becomes a literal goblin instead of the Spider-Man shield, which it's technically comic accurate, but I don't know if that's what I was into or what I was wanting for a Spider-Man
movie.
No, it was
very goofy. Very goofy looking to be taken, especially because that I think if he was from the Raimi movie, maybe it would fit better because of how goofy he looks.
But he looked like Evil Ed from Fright Night. If we can look that up real quick and then look up Dane DeHaan's Green Goblin, it is the same thing. He looks like Evil Ed from Fright Night. But the thing I'll give Amazing Spider-Man 2 over Spider-Man 3 is that it handles the balance of having three villains much better than Spider-Man 3 does. Spider-Man 3 feels like it's a cohesive movie, but they really force the villains to come together in that film in a way that doesn't feel organic. There you go. That's Dane DeHaan's Green Goblin right there. Same thing. Same thing. There you go.
I'm trying to find him with an open mouth there.
Yep. Now this guy will grow up to do gay porn after Fright Night. He's got that face.
What does that mean?
Not that I've studied the faces of gay porn actors, but
he looks he looks like someone that could suck someone off to completion on camera. Mm. No. Yeah, well, that's most 80s actors.
Well, all that to say, Frogman is not on the level of a Sam Raimi production, unfortunately.
No.
Is there anything good you can say about this movie, or did you just hate it top to bottom?
I think the cult aspect was very goofy and out of nowhere and
very
we don't know how to end this thing, so let's just the cult of Frogman, you know, and then they don't really do much with that. But I did like that. I made a note of it. I liked Scotty's melting masks. That was cool when he showed at the end and his face was melting. I was like, oh, that looks all right.
Yeah, I think the practical effects are fine. You know, when there's a bubbly, froggy face, and then you see a guy in a frog costume lurch out like a Power Rangers villain during the cult ceremony. You know what I like? I laughed out loud when I was watching the ending unfold. And the lead character, what does he do? He shoots Frogman in the head with a gun, right? And then 2 seconds after, the old woman points at him and shouts, "Intruder!"
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no shit. He just shot Frogman in the head. You don't have to say intruder. We know this guy's an intruder. I think everybody else in the cult knows he's not one of them if you're shooting Frogman in the head.
Did you like how they try to almost end it like the Blair Witch with a creepy person standing with the back towards camera?
It went into VHS territory. It turned into a VHS film, you know? And someone said that with Late Night with the Devil as well. I forget who it was. They DM'd me and they said, oh yeah, this is like a good version of a VHS anthology short. And that's where this went. It was, hey, we're going into the, if you picked up, maybe this is a rejected, actually that would make a lot of sense. If this was supposed to be for Scare Package 3, the guy's done two of the anthology movies already. If this was supposed to be for Scare Package 3 and then they were like, it ain't happening, it didn't make its money back, what are we going to do with this short we've got where we had a frog walk out of the cave? I don't know. Let's shoot like 50 minutes before then with the guy and we'll do an actual VHS thing and then we'll cut over to like what's clearly an iPhone or something and we're going to feed that through I mean, I think they did feed it onto a VHS tape and then spit it out, which I'll give them credit for that, but maybe they didn't, because the font, the type, August 15th, whatever the fuck the date was in the corner, was not authentic VHS camcorder. It's what you get on one of the apps you get for your iPhone. So maybe they did that. And that, honestly, is pretty passable a lot of the time. There used to be one app in particular I would use frequently with my iPhone 4 or 3, whatever it was. And it would look pretty decent in terms of authenticity. But they very rarely, depending on what app, would get the date and time correct in terms of where that was placed, the size of it, etc. And that's the problem here. When we open with the family trip, which doesn't feel like a 90s family trip anywhere, it feels like right now, there's that element. And all the character dynamics to what I was saying before, it feels so stock. It feels so, let's put a person in charge of the script who has seen every Lifetime movie or every just made for TV, whatever. It's, oh, we hooked up one time, but that was a mistake, wasn't it? But actually, I love you. Oh, cool. All right. Well, we didn't see that coming. I hope it works out between them. Did it? No. I guess not.
Who cares?
Hey, did and you meet my gay best friend who's going to film us the whole time?
Yeah, and also there's zero chemistry between you guys, so I don't even want you to get together. I'm kind of rooting for Frogman the whole time.
Well, we don't even see Frog. Yeah. We see Frogman at the end as clearly just a man in a styrofoam costume. He doesn't frog or anything, you know. He's
it's
just
not even
around.
Creepy.
No,
he just looks like a little chubby guy with a hump.
When you go to Times Square and you see people dressed up as Mickey Mouse and Daisy Duck, that is what Frogman was in this movie, and he has a cult that worships him.
Yeah, at one point his tongue is wrapped on our hero lady, and she's on the floor, and then our hero guy shoots it, I think, and that's how he lets her go. And
oh, did you like how when the tongue was wrapped around, there was like no movement at all? He was just like kind of struggling to drag him.
Yeah, it's not even not even tied on her. It was just on her. Yeah. Tongue. She could have just moved it over.
So. I don't feel good being this harsh on a movie that was clearly done for like $5,000. But you can do a lot more than what you did. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse for bad or shoddy or shit filmmaking. And this is hardly the worst example of what this is. So don't get that impression from our review here. This is definitely far from the worst, but there are a lot of problems with it. There are many, many problems. And there's really no... It renders itself in a situation where there's nothing here that's worth watching.
Yeah, and that's my biggest issue with it, that you could have done a so bad that it's good, or you could have done a parody of the genre, or you could have made it, if you're going to make something goofy, at least follow through with the goofy and don't try to pass it off as serious at times, because then the audience doesn't know if I'm supposed to be taking this serious or if we're just here for a laugh. So there's that connection that was completely missing for me because of how generic all of those elements were. Not just the acting and the dialogue, but also the visual style of it. I understand that it's a found footage movie, so it's not in that style, I guess, to be the most interesting visually, but you can try something. Fuck, you know what I mean? Like, try, give me an interesting creative shot, give me a different point of view, give me a nice framing of the person that's talking, you know. But it feels like it legit feels like this is something that they just recorded on a weekend and they just said, well, we have a mask for a frog and we'll record the frog stuff afterwards. Don't worry. We'll just record that during the week where we live, but we're going into this town for the weekend. So let's just record ourselves interacting with each other here. And then we'll just do the frogman when we have the suits, because that would explain why there's no flavor to the town. You know, they just go to a local, and if they're not a caricature of a local, then you're kind of fucked and you kind of have to deal with what it is, which is kind of what it felt like here. You know, I'm sure that's not what happened, but that would be more believable to me. Like, that's how it feels like. It's a weekend movie that these people shot, and then the frog stuff with the masks is something that they had at home and they had to record afterwards. Don't know if that's what happened, but what happened. But
I think something along those lines. Yeah. It had to be the case, or it's just not enough. Ultimately, that's the biggest problem with this movie, is it's not enough. Clearly, they were able to get a sale, so the director or whoever. I mean, I hope they made a cool 50 G's off this thing, whatever. But yeah, it's not going to be worth recommending to anybody. But the fact that, you know, people have watched it. Can we take a look at the IMDb real quick?
Yeah.
The horror community. I hate them. I hate them so much. But the modern horror community, but the entire horror community for the length of time that genre has existed in film, will see anything. They'll watch anything. They have no standards when it comes to what is worth putting their time towards. Added by 1.4k users, 584 reviews, ratings, excuse me.
Ratings, yeah.
Remarkable. Good for them, I guess, because anybody will watch fucking anything as long as it's in the horror genre. Bloody Disgusting did a review. Found Footage Oddity finds a bizarre monster and delivers on its promise. Thank you, Matt Donato.
This website is the worst offender of that horror brain thing, because I don't think they've ever reviewed anything horror in any type of negative way. Everything is always something that delivers on its promises. What's the promise with this movie? That there's a frogman?
That there's a frogman.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't remember the last time that I saw these people saying any type of anything negative to anything. Everything is just pump it up. Or hyping up horror stuff.
Abigail. Oh yeah, Larry Fassenden has a new movie coming out where there's a werewolf or something. Remember Larry Fassenden? Damn, that kind of looks like him right there, that Chucky screenshot. Damn. Channel
Festival
Georgia
of the Rivera. Living Dead.
Okay, all right. Yeah. No, thank you. Damn, get some new ideas. I mean, I it makes me rethink any time we've ever criticized an A24 horror movie, because the worst of those is still so much better than what horror fans make in their spare time. And it's very... They reviewed Lifetime's $1 million Lethal Listing.
That's what
movie.
I was going to say. It says it's a sensational exploration of money and marriage. It's like, how does anyone visit this website and take anything they say seriously?
So these companies are probably paying Bloody Disgusting to write a positive review, because then it'll go on Rotten Tomatoes, and that's one point in the 100% column. It's probably just that there's very easy film journalists in horror that are, you know, it doesn't take much to manipulate them. It doesn't take much to get a good or positive score from them. The nostalgia tank is running on it. Oh, wow. So Ghostbusters gets a bad review, but Frogman. Check out Lifetime and Frogman. Skip the Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, see Sasquatch Sunset over Stacy's Welcome with this gross out humor.
Okay, so you see this here. The movies that go to theaters, fuck them. They're not paying us. The young up-and-comers who are making shit. Okay, well, they're going to share the article. You know, we might get a little bit of a buzz. Maybe we can charge them $50 for a positive review. I don't know. That you should be watching. Go watch Lifetime. Stay at home. Fuck the theater. All right. Yeah. I've had enough of this Bloody Disgusting business here. So Frogman, I mean, to its benefit, I try to think with Jack's criteria in mind of nothing under 90 minutes could be a bad movie. I think this challenges that, certainly. But it didn't bother me. I didn't feel at the end of time like, wow, I could have used that 80 minutes for something else. I could have used that time to edit. It went by a little too quick for me to be bothered by the fact it was not a good movie, you know? So I'll give them credit. Again, I like the lead actor in this movie. I think he's got enough charisma to pull off this sort of thing, but he just needed better material to work with. The other actors, I don't have anything positive or negative to say about them. It's kind of this situation where these people aren't friends in real life. They're very clearly just actors they picked up off of backstage. So there's not a lot of natural chemistry there, and that's impeding upon some of their performances. But I don't think that anyone is bad. I wouldn't call them poorly acting or anything like that. It's the material, the situation of the production, and I don't think it services them well.
Yeah, you get a 5 out of 10 out of everyone. Just anyone could have done this type of performance, you know.
Could this have been saved in editing? Do you think that there's enough here? Because they play around with a lot, and I feel like it would have been easy to make it. Any found footage movie, really, I think has an opportunity to be made more interesting, even if it's not working. You can find either other angles to take with that material that you're using as this is the footage that was discovered, or you can add to it, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be this linear thing. Maybe it's just like, oh, it's a choppy videotape, we're cutting back to some other time. Something to fill in gaps and just make it seem a bit more fascinating to watch. I don't know. Could this movie, do you think, have been saved in editing?
I think it could have been saved as a short, because there's not enough to make a movie. You know, the movie already is, 117, I think. And there's so much filler that doesn't do anything for the story or the characters that I think if you cut some of that stuff and then you edit the cult thing differently, so that it's not so... I think maybe if you do some camera tricks that you end up doing in that scene, because everything kind of looks like shit, so you have to hide it. If you splice some of that stuff, maybe throughout the movie, it won't be so jarring when it looks shitty when that happens, you know, because that kind of took me out of it. It's just like, oh, now that the equipment is failing, it kind of looks bad. But I think if you cut maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes of their interactions that really go nowhere and really do nothing to develop their relationship or their chemistry, that could make it stronger, even though, like you said, it doesn't really drag. But I think the ending also doesn't work. The ending just kind of feels like they didn't know where to go and let's just do this cult thing. I think if it was maybe half hour, you could have gotten very similar stuff that what you got with a longer movie. Because I do feel like a lot of it is just their interactions and none of it is interesting in any or charming in any way. It's all just kind of there, you know.
It felt to me that the director or writer didn't know what to do, to echo your point, when it came to that ending, and probably had the idea in their head, wouldn't it be cool if there was a Blair Witch cult, if there were people who worshiped the Blair Witch and it wasn't just a town fascination? What if we applied that idea to Frogman? Well, why are they worshiping him? You could have done a whole thing, because there is like... weird, like the whole concept of meme magic and frogs and Pepe and all that has roots in a someone's gonna do a Pepe horror movie, like Winnie the Pooh style.
Oh my god, don't put that out there. Fuck. But look at something like Hot Fuzz, right? I think maybe I might be aiming a little too high, comparing productions, but that movie is about a cult in a small town. But the way that they set it up so that when the cult is revealed is that little by little, you're being revealed these people that are acting kind of weird, people that are acting differently, people that interact with each other in a different way. They interact with our characters. So by the time that is revealed, it makes sense that everyone's acting odd. Mm-hmm. Here, everyone acts in a straight line. They don't have any ups and downs. Even the townspeople, they're all very 5 out of 10s, 5 out of like emotional depth and performance. So when the cult is revealed, you're kind of like, oh, you have no idea what to do here. So now we just throw a cult in there, you know? So I think it's missing elements for the story to work that I don't think they have the footage for that. Because, yeah, it's all very rushed and it's all very out of nowhere when it's revealed. And I believe that if you peppered in some of those odd elements at the beginning, once it's revealed, then it would make sense. Or, I don't know, there's a hooded figure that run behind them. So you see a hooded figure or something, or like a hint that something might happen. I don't know. But yeah, it would be very difficult to salvage this and make it even scary anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, this is something that they could have saved themselves a whole lot of grief by just going back to the drawing board in the script stage and then maybe spending a bit more time on post and doing really simple things. Accommodate your audience a little bit easier, because again, there's some scenes with really bad audio that is unprofessional. 500 people should not be rating this movie on IMDb with that level of quality. You know, there's just problems throughout, and there's nothing I can really say about this movie that makes it worth checking out if you're a horror fan in a casual sense or even in a not so casual sense. There are much better movies out there that have done this exact concept and executed it so much better. Even if you're hungry for something that is new within this genre, I can't really recommend it, which is unfortunate.
Oof. I'm just reading the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, and it's all just...
Was it at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes?
No, it's 88 critics. Whoa. and only 14 for now, but it's 88% critics, 52% audience, but the reviews, and this is what I hate about fucking movie criticism, because you look at the picture of the person, right, and then you read what they say, just kind of like, shut, you don't talk like this, shut the fuck up, you know. Anthony Cousins and co-writer John Carsco use so-called Lovecraftian aspects to give us a fresh perspective on how true stories about horrifying events are commercialized and sold as entertainment, even when they have very real effects on survivors.
Did AI write this? See, I've noticed something. I had taken a look at the reviews for some movie this past week on Rotten Tomatoes, and one of the first ones to come up was some woman who wrote for a blog I've never heard of before, and the level of writing immediately made me think it was done by AI.
Yeah.
And that's what it seemed, sounds like, is like, this is what the movie's about. Put it into the prompt, and then they spit back something like that, like, it speaks to the power of survivors who undergo traumatic experience. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's Frog Man.
The movie? What? The survivor? What? He recorded him, and then no one believes him? That's the suffering? And then the town is making money out of it, so, oh, capitalism. What? Shut the fuck up. Frogman knows exactly how silly and absurd it is. No, it doesn't, because it doesn't try to be any. Never backs down on its own weirdness. A wild ride of hilarious high strangeness, gross out gags, and kooky, lovable characters.
Yeah.
Don't know what movie he watched. Don't, because none of those elements, at least personally, I found in that movie. I just pissing myself off. The filmmaking team leans into the ridiculousness of a human-sized frog. They really don't. They present it as like a real threat, mm-hmm. allowing the proceedings to get a bit silly. No, they don't. This does not detract from the horror, however. In fact, it makes everything that much scarier.
I can't imagine someone sitting down in a dark room late at night and watching this and feeling an ounce scared.
It's just like, oh no, the frog man is going to put his tongue around my belly very softly. Like, what? Oh, they're going to chase me over this, I guess, tunnel, but they're never going to get to me, so then I'll just get away. Yeah, I hate the horror community so much. And it sucks because I was a huge like horror person back in the day, but the horror community and the horror movies have pushed me away so far that now I just look at them with like disdain. I'm just like, shut up. Go watch fucking Chucky 5 for the 20th time and shut the fuck up.
I think they're just a great example of the biggest problem today, which is that everyone across the board, but especially you see it with creatives, is just giving into their base impulses when it comes to crafting or indulging in anything artistic. And it gives you a very low standard to accept as professional now. And that hurts filmmaking across the board. This type of movie would probably be shot on a VHS camcorder if it was back in 1993, and it would be like a cool little artifact that would be uploaded to YouTube 35 years later, and we'd all go, hey, they really tried with this one. But now you can sell this for like 20 grand, and it'll probably wind up on Shudder, and it's getting 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's unbelievable. But that's the culture we live in right now. And so, yeah. Frogman, it's a big old skip it. A big old ribbit.
Yeah, it's not even bad enough to hate it. And I mean, I don't think I will ever watch it again, but it's not
you
so
don't
bad.
Think,
that it's
but there
good.
Is a possibility. There's a chance episode 400, we go back to Frogman.
Yeah.
Return to Frogman Cave. That's the sequel. Will there be a sequel? I sure hope so. We got to continue the Frogman series. We got to commit to the bit.
And we're going to know if they get together after she dies. Did she die? I don't remember.
No, they just never spoke again.
Yeah, right.
That was it.
Oh, true. Oh. Scotty and there was dies. one line at the end that made me laugh. That because at the end of the movie, like, a filmmaker that didn't know how to end his movie, he had to explain it with text. And the first little bit of text that comes out after the screen goes black says, authorities refuse to take this footage seriously. And I was like, yeah, me too. Like, yeah, same. Like, don't give me that shit. Don't end your movie like that, because I'm just gonna fucking make fun of it. What the fuck? But yeah.
You know, there's another movie that is out this week that's about, from what I saw anyway, the same level of quality. And it is 90, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. If I sit down and watch the film, I'll be like, whoa, I was way off. But from the clip I saw, Hundreds of Beavers. Have you seen this? Have you heard of this?
I saw
our old pal Simeon Jimmy review this on Letterboxd and gave it a good review. It's at 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. And not only 95%, it's certified fresh, which means it has crossed the threshold of having more than 50 positive reviews. So Hundreds of Beavers, I like the poster. It's a good throwback to the 70s and 80s when you'd see a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But I watched a clip from it, and it looked like a CGI project somebody did in their garage.
Is that the green screen movie that you mentioned on the last episode?
Yeah. No. I don't think I mentioned it on the last episode. I think we were talking about it after the show, trying to figure out what to cover.
True.
But
yeah, you're right. Yeah, the poster's cool. It's very old school, very Around the World in 80 Days, I think, used a similar style poster. But after we talked about it and saw the trailer, I mean, it's not the type of movie that I would expect to get that high, because it does kind of look like a green screen project. But is that on the Costa Rican theater?
It's whoa, Adam. Adam came up. You summoned Adam. Look at this. Just gave Hundreds of Beavers an 8 out of 10.
Now,
why would he do that? I hate that we even have to question his motivations for all these men in suits.
Because he wants to be him. He wants to be scared of the two men surrounding him wearing beaver suits. Maybe this is the movie that will make him come in the show. We should review it.
See, I didn't think you were going to go on the show when you said that. I just heard, this is the movie that'll make him come on the show.
Well, he gave him an 8, right?
Yeah. There's a good reason for that 8. It was a well-earned 8 from Hundreds of Beavers.
How long is it? How long do you think it was edging for?
Is this movie longer or shorter than Frogman?
Longer, 148.
You're testing me. I don't know. I don't know if I could really. I mean, it has twice as many ratings as. I mean, it's kind of crazy that Frogman got 1.3 for a certified movie.
It's got a Cannibal the Musical vibes.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah.
At least that those couple of clips I just played there, which is really not a movie that anyone should revisit because it's really not good. It's really goddamn.
No, I tried watching really, that on Tubi or something, and there was no charm in there for me to find.
No.
What is this tab say?
Before.
What is this? How to lose your virginity?
What?
You Googled that?
No. I was looking at the movies on this fucking website.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is a Spanish movie. I was like, what is this?
Oh, yeah. It's the name of a movie. That's right.
It is.
Yep.
I wasn't even born in August. Shut up.
Look at
This is the next movie we're covering, right?
I don't know. Maybe? I don't know. I have to arrange it with the potential guest.
Look at what?
The Johnny Knoxville movie. I was telling you about this before. Look at his pose here. Why is he doing this? Who let him pose this way? That is so unflattering. He looks so soy boy. Why? He used to be so cool. Why is he looking like that? They couldn't even like reduce his hips in Photoshop.
No,
I don't get it. Why does it keep popping up AliExpress? See, the Costa Rican theater has Paramount put this movie out. They love Johnny Knoxville. Theo Vaughn.
Theo Vaughn. Bobby Lee.
Oh my God. That's not Bobby Lee. You're just being racist right now. This is not Bobby Lee. This is just some Asian.
No, that's his producer, who's his cousin. Okay. But Bobby Lee's in here too. Look.
You didn't know that.
I'm gonna be honest. I downloaded it because I was really? Let's see if this is worse than. What's the movie where he plays the Special Olympics?
The Ringer. Guy?
Yeah, I was like, let's see if this is worse than that. So I downloaded it.
And did you watch it?
I haven't. No, not yet. I haven't had time.
Okay, we're getting into a period in the year where we're watching shit we would never normally watch. Clearly.
Yeah. There's Bobby Lee.
Okay, this is making me think.
What is this fucking soundtrack?
Bobby Lee. I mean, I follow a guy who hired Bobby Lee for a short film, to star in a short film. So I guess if they can get Bobby Lee for this and they got Theo Vaughn for this, that means that we could probably get Theo Vaughn for Mass State Lottery too. That's what I'm getting here. At this rate, we could probably get Johnny Knoxville for Mass State Lottery too. This feels like
Bobby Lee to play my character.
There was a movie with Artie Lang and Ralph Macchio. That I remember
beer
was
fest.
Like a,
no beer league no beer, league. Beer
no I think you're right league. It was I think it was beer league. It was a big hit at Blockbuster, and that's the only way I ever heard of it or gave it a shot is people rented it en masse. And
it was beer league, and it was bench warmers came out around the same time too, right?
But beer league was direct setup. To DVD. Bench warmers was a huge theatrical movie. I mean, not huge.
Seems like too safe, maybe, right? Yeah. Like it feels like very much like we're making a gross out movie, but it's PG. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and
everything's inspiring, and we're buddies now, and look at how he's waving. Like, what happened to Johnny Knoxville? This is not the Johnny Knoxville that. You know, you're terrorized by him on set. You don't know if he's going to fucking tase you because you're just standing there. This is just like Jay Moore. Look at Jay Moore's giant head. Look.
He looks disgusting these days. And I hate to say that about anyone who's a man, but Jay Moore does look like Colin Farrell's penguin.
Look at this.
Oh, he's actually, I'll be honest with you. He lost some weight. He looked much worse the last time I saw him in something. I think he was in, he was in something recently. And he was only in it for about a minute. But he looked the worst I've ever seen someone who was previously in shape look?
I mean, look at him there.
Yeah, I know. This is an improvement. It's weird seeing all of Joe Rogan's stable of B-list, Kate Upton, remember her? The B-list comedians on the circuit make their way into movies now and become, they're the mainstream comedians. Like Andrew Santino being in Ricky Stenicki, which I enjoy. Oh, yeah. I enjoyed Ricky Stenicki, I'll be honest with you. It was two hours, but who is it? Bobby Farrelly, whichever Farrelly brother directed it. Still making the same type of comedy.
Don't you know that roster of podcasters is the new Judd Apatow crew? That's what's going to start.
They kind of are, I guess. Now, I mean, who else are they putting in these comedies that are comedians? Nobody.
Are they even making this? I don't know. They were still making this. See, like this feels. Is this? What's the rating for this thing?
It's probably rated R, but they give R ratings to people who smoke cigarettes in movies now. If you show a leg, a bare leg, that's PG-13. So, are you watching anything good lately before we close out the show? Because I feel we did talk about Frogman enough.
Yeah.
But are you watching anything good lately?
Like series?
No. Series, movies. I mean, Rebel Moon Part 2 came out today, and it has more than 60% lower of a rating than Frogman. What am I supposed to make about that? Now, I haven't seen any advertising at all for Rebel. It seems like they're kind of burying it. Maybe the first one didn't perform as well as they were hoping.
So did they release the director's cut or did they release the
second? No, I was just going to say, I think announcing and talking about there being a director's cut that's R-rated has it's made these movies seem castrated as a result because they're PG-13, they're for kids. But even if you're a kid and you're the type who would watch Rebel Moon, it's not going to be something you jump to when you know there's going to be an edgier, cooler version that's going to come out in 4 months.
Yeah, that's really dumb. That's a very dumb way of just release them at the same time. No one's going to watch that movie twice. And if you're like a diehard Zack Snyder like you, I don't think I'm going to watch that R-rated.
I'm a diehard Zack. I love Zack Snyder. I've watched his Joe Rogan interview more than once, but even the first Rebel Moon movie was a hard time for me. I'll watch this because I'm a completist, and I'm such a completist that maybe I've accessed a very rare exclusive movie from another filmmaker who's not on the same level as
well. Was it real?
I haven't gotten it yet. I'm hoping. But here's the thing. We're not going to be the first, unfortunately. Someone else by three fucking days. I just realized we're on my television right now. I didn't mean to have that going. Like I'm doubling over on the TV here, because I was watching the newest version of Mass State Lottery, which I'll tell you about when we get off this show. But
No, I'm not going to tell you right now.
Internal stuff. So
okay,
I'll fill you in on that. But I finished watching a good chunk of that. But anyway, to what I was saying before, we may have access to a rare film that very few people on the planet Earth have ever seen from one of my favorite filmmakers, one of your former favorites from a bygone era of movie making. And we're kind of late, actually. We're not totally late to the party. I think we'll be the second people to give a review of it publicly. One person beat us by 3 days. 3 days after I put in the order from a rare merchandise vendor, they put up a review, and the review made me really discouraged for when it's time to sit down and watch. Because it sounds like, to what I was saying before, all of the base impulses of modern filmmaking being released into this project. And it makes me think Frogman may be the better movie of these two movies. This rare artifact of a film, which again, less than probably 100 people have watched this movie from a big director. It's only an hour long. an hour and a couple minutes. So it's technically feature length.
You know? Yeah, so look forward to maybe hearing about that one.
If it's maybe it might not even arrive. I'm kind of jumping the gun here. I could have got scammed.
You might just get a DVD of that rape Batman movie you already have.
We could give that a proper review on this show. You know,
I don't want to put myself through that again. God damn.
Are you good to watch in your private time and not with friends on a live stream? Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking weird. No, I don't know how many times I'm going to finish.
Oh God. And the other thing I started watching is The Sympathizer, which is a limited series on HBO that I thought was going to be directed entirely by Park Chan-wook. It's not.
Is that the one with Queen Latifah playing Denzel Washington?
No, that's The Equalizer.
No, wait, that's The Equalizer. Right. Okay. That's almost close.
That's a procedural on CBS right now, which at the end of this year might not even be a network anymore. That's kind of intriguing. No, The Sympathizer is about a communist spy who is sent to infiltrate the American faction or the non-communist faction at the tail end of the Vietnam War. And he's supposed to gather info for the Viet Cong. But then, you know, Vietnam falls, and then he's still part of this group that is working with the Americans, and he's got to flee the country and continue to obtain information from outside the country, even though he doesn't want to do that. And in the process of this, the Viet Cong wind up killing one of his closest friends and his wife and whatever. So he's this complicated, I'm on this side, but they just fucking killed my best friend and his baby and everything, you know. And Robert Downey Jr. is in there playing James Caan, essentially. He looks exactly like James Caan. He's great. And the show, I actually thought the first episode was excellent. It's a return to form for Park Chan-wook. This has a vibe to it that is much more similar to his work around the Vengeance trilogy era of his filmmaking than Decision to Leave, which left me so disappointed and just felt completely void of energy. But even though he's the co-showrunner and he's written every episode, they got rid of him as director after about three or four episodes. Why the fuck would you ever do that? So it's not truly fully his work. And I fear that The Sympathizer is going to run into the same problem as Tokyo Vice. Tokyo Vice had Michael Mann for that first episode. The rest of the episodes, even though they're pretty good, it's not the level of quality. There's not that artistic imprint that the first episode left you with. So why get rid of Park Chan-wook halfway through? For the ending, it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's very evident to hire someone that has a distinctive visual style and then you just replace them. I guess, no, because, I mean, it is the TV making way, I guess, back in the day, instead of just having a main director. But when you have someone that has that, when you have a Sam Raimi, I guess we go back to the Spider-Man thing. When you have a Sam Raimi, if you want him to direct one episode, it's going to be very noticeable when his episode shows, and it might take away from the other more generic, less stylized, less, you know, personality episodes. So that doesn't make any sense, especially if you're ending it with the non-director. Yeah, you know, like that.
You think you would at least circle back. But
yeah,
no.
So you hook them. Maybe have a random do the middle episode. But you don't hook them with his style, and then at the end it's just like, yeah, well, now, good. Like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it's a total misstep, and I was so disappointed to hear that after I finished, because this is what happened before with Tokyo Vice. When they initially announced Tokyo Vice, it wasn't even Michael Mann. I think it was Dustin Daniel Cretton who did Short Term 12, and I think he actually went on to do that Asian Marvel superhero movie, if I remember right.
Quan-Chi?
Shang-Chi, yeah.
Shang-Chi, Quan-Chi's okay. Mortal Kombat, isn't it? Something like that.
So it's a very unfortunate move that they decided to go that route instead of allowing him to have that, auteur imprint the entire way through. And I looked at the other two guys, their filmographies. It's not like bad, But it's not Park Chan-wook. You have the real deal. So why would you then resort to the guy who directed episodes of National Treasure for a miniseries?
Wow. Yeah, that doesn't... Yeah. So that just... Yeah, so what do they hire? A guy that directed the Hawaii Five-O TV show to do an episode two? That's what it feels like.
That's how they're ending. Because they go from Park Chan-wook to the guy who directed City of God and the Two Popes. So it's like, okay, all right. The Constant Gardener. Like, these are big projects, big movies that were nominated for awards. It's different. I don't know, you know, if that's going to maintain the same energy as a Park Chan-wook. But yeah. It's something. And then you cut over to National Treasure episodes to end the series. Oh, the series finale. That guy. All right.
Are they out yet, those episodes?
Critics have gotten the full series. I saw some guy on YouTube reviewed the full series, and he got it just because he was Vietnamese and had a YouTube channel. He had less subscribers than we do. So we should have leaned into your Asian-ness and got a screener for this fucking thing, is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
But no, there's only one episode that's out.
Okay.
And the acting's good.
Yeah, that's just...
It's shot very well. You get cool, interesting Park Chan-wook shots, like a split diopter here and there. And, you know, it's nice. It was very refreshing to watch that episode. And having him working with one of the best actors alive, Robert Downey Jr., really cool, really great. There's not the problems that you ran into with Stoker on this one, where it's like he could have used a better translator on set or somebody who could work hand in hand with him to help guide that. So that sucks. That sucks to find out, especially since he did all the episodes of the Little Drummer Girl TV series for, oh God, what was it, A&E or AMC? And I wasn't on board with that one. That's one I have to go back to. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good decision for me. It might actually, like, put me off from watching the thing.
Because
I hate when I start watching something and then halfway after I've already put 4 hours in, then there's a change there that just ruins everything. And it's just like, fucking fuck. I don't want to finish this thing. But I guess you'll let me know, because I'm sure you'll finish it.
Yeah, I think I will. Because again, what I've seen thus far is pretty good, and I think it's worth riding out, especially since I'm going to be low on television once Deal or No Deal Island comes to an end in a week or two, and I'm running out. I'm just waiting for the next Peacock reality show to drop, which apparently is going to be a thing where they're just going to monitor bears in the, not like gay bears, but bears. In the wild and see who gains weight the most and then give a prize to the bear that gains the most weight.
What, so you feed the bears?
No, there's just, they're going to observe the bears, I think, and see who gets the fattest, and whoever does wins.
How is that a competition?
Well, they don't know it's a competition, so it's all, you know, it's, you know, really digging through several layers of reality.
You mean the bears don't know it's a competition?
Well, how would they know? So that's going to be, I guess, what I'm watching before I see a new, you know, season with humans as the competitors. I'm looking into getting on one of these Peacock reality shows. I want to figure out how I can get in the mix. I'm very interested. So if anyone is a listener and works in casting, I will go do that. I will do any of the. I'll do Deal or No Deal Island 2. I'll do Deal or No Deal Island 2, 3, 4, and 5. Just give me a call.
There multiple contestants in that? Do you have to be shirtless and ripped to be a contestant on the show?
No. Actually, a lot of the contestants, I mean, not all, but there are some contestants on the show that feel like they came out of a trailer park in Florida and sell knickknacks on eBay for a living. So it's like 60-year-old women, 45-year-old schlubby lady, and then you have some buff guys, of course, but the guy, the only reason I'm actually watching the show is there's a Survivor winner on there named Boston Rob. And similar to your Nacho Libre fandom, he's kind of my Nacho Libre. And I love Boston Rob, but damn, he has put on some pounds since he played Survivor. He's just hanging out shirtless, and it's not like a survival situation like Survivor's. It's just like a luxury resort they're staying at. And he's in this hammock with his massive gut hanging over the side of his pants. And he's still like kicking all their asses in the competitions. They're like jacked dudes that look like they would be on Jersey Shore 10 years ago. And you have this 45-year-old man with a Kevin James style body that's taking him to school. It's amazing.
Is this Boston Bob or Rob or whatever?
Boston Rob.
This is the guy that we talked about like 50 episodes ago that was on The Real World, and then he got canceled, but he had like a music career. Remember, that was from like Quincy.
Oh, no, not even. He wishes he was a Boston Rob. No, that was a guy named Brandon. His nickname in town used to be Hollywood, and he was like a hot guy on MySpace back in the day. And he looked like the new Crow starring the Skarsgård kid, and he would take photos on his MySpace page with like his abs showing, and he'd have mascara and eyeshadow, and he'd be like this, showing his abs with his open shirt. And then he showed up on The Real World, and he was fat on The Real World. And that was like in 2011 or 2010. I remember he had his shirt off and he went in a tree. He was like, nobody gets me. I'm a recovering addict. I'm so depressed. And he had like a gut that was hanging out. It's like, damn, dude, you put on, I mean, you didn't even get famous and you got fat. You can't be doing that in the tree like Boston Rob 14 years later. You know? So
yeah.
Boston Rob won a show. He didn't do anything. He used coke and got disqualified from The Real World house. So it's a shame.
Cool.
It's a shame.
Cool, Boston Rob.
Anyway, I guess that'll conclude movies for this week. Hopefully we get that rare film, and that may be the next episode of the show.
When are you supposed to get it? When are you supposed to be getting it?
Let me find out right now. I think I'm going to be getting it this coming week. This is a big week. Big week.
Is it one of those like one of those weird Chinese tracking companies?
No, it's
don't tell you.
It's all American. It's in Albuquerque, New Mexico right now. Oh, no. It has arrived in New Jersey. So I'll get it tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
We will find out tomorrow if I got had or if we have a very exclusive episode of movies coming up for a film.
Yeah.
You will not find on any podcast today.
I use the website DH Gates. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No.
They do counterfeit clothes, and I use it to buy like basketball or soccer jerseys because they end up being like $15. And if you buy an original one, they're like $80 to $120. And they're made by the same people. So when you get the shirt, it looks just like their real shirt, but you're saving like $100. And obviously, if you're a dork that cares about having like an original jersey or whatever, go ahead and spend $120. But I'm getting like the same thing for like $15. The only thing is that they send it from China or Taiwan, and sometimes it would send it with like a weird tracking number that won't update for like 2 weeks, and then it updates and it's like, oh, your package is here, and it's like, oh fuck, okay, oh all right, I guess it's very quick. I actually thought that it was going to take like 3 months to get here, and it only takes like a week more than what American shipments take to get here. So that's what I thought you bought it on a website like that where they would just send you this is our FedEx, but it's Chinese.
The most casual shipping around. No, I got a lens actually from China, and it's that same situation. That's just, I think China in general acts that way. I got myself a, what people have been doing recently, this is such like a hipster trend, or it's going to be, it's not yet, but they've been rehousing the lenses that you would find on disposable cameras for professional cameras.
Okay.
So, and I've seen videos with people experimenting with that or making them themselves, because apparently that's easy to do. But then I just went on eBay and I was like, oh, it's only $16. Yeah, I'll just buy one and wait 4 weeks for it to arrive. So that's going to be something. So it would be like if you bought a disposable Fuji film camera, you know, that type of lens where there's no depth of field, but it's vintage mm-hmm. and it's got like a particular look. We'll be able to do that yeah. with video. So that'll be nice. A cool experiment, if nothing else. Worth the $16 to find out. I'll say that. But no, yep. I bought this movie stateside. So we'll be finding out tomorrow if that is the case or not. And then I'm going to have to figure out a way to rip it off the Blu-ray, if it is, and send it to you so we can yeah. cover this movie.
Just record it with your phone.
Yeah, you know, I'll just hold it up to the
just
TV.
Just hold your phone like that for mm-hmm. 2 hours or however long it is.
That'll be good. All right, Horror Week, perhaps. We'll find out. All right, that has been Movies for this week. Thank you for listening.